Colonel Warburton, Real 2. We were talking about your time with the 511 battery at Walton, at the mouth of the Deben, when you were with 147 Field Regiment RHA, the Essex Yeomanry, a bit of a mouthful. And you reckon you went to join them around about July 1940, after 6 months at Firely. And you said that... what sort of a routine did you establish? Because if you just had the stand to and stand to, what would you do for the rest of the day?
During the day, we were training very hard.
What sort of training were you doing?
Improving our gun drill, improving our mobility.
So concentrate on those. So which gun did you have? Was that 18 pounds as well?
At that time, we had 4.2 howitzers.
And what sort of training to improve your gun drill and mobility, what exactly would you do?
Well, we used to take them out, coming in and out of action was a thing we trained very much on. We used to take the guns out of the gun pits during the day and go off into the country and come into action and come out of action and move, general movement, fire movement sort of thing without firing. And then we get them back again for the night stand too.
What did the gun positions look like? Could you give us
They were in gun pits. So they were shielded all around by...
How deep?
By sort of armed earth and stuff. And being howitzers, they had a fairly high trajectory. So there was no question of hitting the ramp with the shells or anything. We didn't have... The time came when we'd been there for a few months.
Hang on, just while we're on the gun position. So you'd have gun pits. What about the command post and things like that?
The command post, of course, was that was a bigger pit. It was a deeper hole than the guns, you know. They were in a hole, just the same, in a pit place.
Not covered?
No, not really covered, no. And the OP was at within the building overlooking the mouth of the Deben, you know, further forward. The time came when we were told to fire the guns to have one practice round to see if we could get near the target at all. But much to our dismay, when we looked more closely at the guns, each of the guns had a brass plate on its breech block saying on no account was this gun to fire live ammunition. True.
And you'd only just found this out?
So we decided, well, the best thing to do is to fire charge one, which is a very, very low charge. I think there were five charges altogether, and this was the lowest of them all. And it had a very limited range, but it would just reach the target. And before we actually pulled the thing, we thought we'd better take precautions. So we acquired the longest clotheslines we could find, which stretched to about 100 yards. We attached the one end to the firing pin, firing lever, and we retreated the other end into a hole we previously dug before we pulled it. And we laid the gun and got everything ready and the rope tied on, and we all retreated and pulled the thing, and it went off. Much to our delight, it didn't blow the gun up and hit the target. So we felt all was done. But it was quite a moment wondering what was going to happen.
Were these guns changed after that? I mean, or were the breeches changed?
They were perfectly all right for that role. So they remained there. Our transport during all these activities at Weatherington at Walton,
all right, yeah,
consisted of cars and lorries many of them still with baker's van marks on them and haulage contractors. And they're nearly all in a state of very poor repair.
Now we've looked in the thing the history. You've got a little history here of the regiment, and you were definitely, as far as you remember, a troop of 511.
Yeah.
What about did anything happen? Did your training develop or anything? Because you left there in December, according to the book, to go to Norwich.
Yeah.
Anything in particular happened while you were there that you recall?
In Norwich?
No, in Walton.
Well, other than firing the guns, that was really the most from their own personal point of view. It was a very good sporting area.
In what? Shooting?
Yes.
Was that your hobby? Could you tell us a bit about your shooting?
Yes, yes. You see, we were there for the party shooting and for the pheasant shooting. So we had quite a good time, but they couldn't find guns to shoot there, all these birds and things, and we were there. But then we went to Norwich. We weren't to Norwich very long, but I can remember it was very snowy at that particular time, and we had our wagon line some distance away from our quarters, and there was always a problem of taking all the wagons up to the wagon lines and then getting back to your quarters afterwards. And one particular occasion, we had a little Austin PU, as they used to call them, little 1000 weight Austin things, and we had 14 drivers in it. But all 4 wheels were touching their wings. But it meant either that or walking 2 miles through snow. So we thought anything was better than that. So off we went. But then we went off to our tour of the east coast in Norfolk and Suffolk.
It seems to be round about Holt and Sheringham that you were.
Yes, we went to West Brompton first of all. That was our place. And we were there for some time.
What were you doing there?
I can't remember what the hell we were doing there.
One thing that happened was that the battery was reorganised, and this is when A troop, and a 511 battery was formed from the two howitzer.
Well, I don't think it was, because I eventually finished up in A troop and became 413 battery. But Major Redbane was certainly my battery commander at one time. Whether that was because the A troop became A troop for the regiment eventually, became the number one troop, obviously, right of the thing. But it was 413 battery then, so I don't know how the batteries used to be 413, 431, and 511.
So you're not quite sure, but they also talked.
I'm sure it was 511 on the bottom line. I don't know if they got the 413, I don't know.
So you were posted to 413, A Troop 413, at some point.
At some point, yes.
Now, what about the re-equipment? Because you got 25 pounders coming in. What do you remember of that?
Well, we had eventually. No, but we got all sorts of funny things. When we were at
doesn't matter. Was it just a village on the
West Brompton? I think it was. We had 75.
What were they like? Because people talk about them a lot.
Then, but at some stage in the game, we had some 75 because I was very responsible converting the range fighters from degrees to what's the French equivalent? Not that now, but it was some fraction didn't go. It was 960 or something like that. And instead of 360 degrees, it was 960. I had to convert all these damn things in the range tables that they had.
So what did you think of the 75s?
It was a very simple gun. Very effective. A very effective gun, but it was very basic. And then eventually we got on to... we had ordinary 1825 partners at the time.
What were they like?
Well, really, it was the old 18 partners just souped up a bit, you know, the 25 partner shell. And then eventually...
Was it a successful conversion, would you say?
Oh, I did say, yes, very. It was a very good gun. And then we eventually got onto the self-propelled guns, and I can't remember when we got onto one.
What about the 25-pounders themselves? You got those as well, didn't you?
Well, I did the 1825-pounder.
You didn't get the...
I can't remember when we got the SPs. They're the SP-25-pounders.
Right, now, they seem to have gone... in October 41, you moved to Nottingham. Is there anything you remember before that? Or was it just a period on that coast with various guns in various places?
What the dickens are we doing in Nottingham? I'm damned if I know.
Well, that's where they joined the 42nd Armoured Division.
Oh, that's probably when they got our SPs then. I remember being in Nottingham.
What were the self-propelled 25-pounders like? Did they have a name?
Yes, they did indeed. They were called the Priest, I think it was. Does that make sense?
Does make sense, yeah. And what were the Priests like? Could you describe what they were like?
It was like a Sherman tank, and instead of a turret, it had an open carriage, and the 25-pounder mounted in front. The suspension and the track work, I think, was the same as the Sherman, except that it had a right whirlwind engine, which is an air-cooled engine, whereas the Sherman had the traditional diesel or petrol engine.
And how did the role of the unit change when you got equipped with these? And, of course, you became part of an armoured division as well.
Yes, we became much more mobile. And, of course, we were able to cross country much quicker and much more easily than we could go with tow guns and things. It was a much more efficient, much more active life as a gunner in an SP regiment. And because we were working with tanks all the time, we didn't work with them.
And how exactly did you liaise, firstly with the tanks and secondly, with your own self-propelled guns? Because you're almost tanks yourself.
When we got in this armour, your OPs were virtually living with the tank regiment. I mean, the whole time, during the Normandy thing, I hardly saw the guns at all. Get everything through the tank regiment.
So an OP officer would go forward with the tanks?
Yes, with the tanks.
Would you actually be in a tank?
Yes.
And you'd practice that, would you?
Yes, I wish I had a tank of my own. And I had, instead of a gun, I had an extra wireless set in the tank. And that had one or two amusing incidents with that.
While you were training or when we got to France? We'll come to that. That's all right. What about the training with the tanks? What do you remember of the training? And where was it done?
Well, we had to do most of it on the shores of the plain and similar places.
And what do you remember of training with tanks?
Well, most of my memories of sort of thing, of getting caught up with false crests. It's full of these waves. It's a very good test map reading, it's very good training, so we couldn't do better.
And did you train in Yorkshire as well? It looks like you're in Yorkshire.
Yes, we were up at
Thirsk.
No, we were up at Thirsk for a short time on the race course, and we had SP guns up there, I think. And for a short time, I went as an LO to H2RA, Headquarters Artillery, and I looked after Staunton Range, Staunton Moor, which was near Kirby Moorside in Yorkshire, where the residents used to come and practice with live ammunition. Not only the SS Yeoman, but the Worcestershire Yeoman, everyone, and the 10th Regiment, and any other odd people onto farm mortars and that sort of thing.
And what was your job on the range?
Well, I was responsible for the range, the organisation of the range. And I lived up there on a Hutton Hole in solitary state with my driver, the Batman, simply down the ground.
And how did you organise a range? Do you see what I mean? What was your job?
Well, we had to make sure that the range was safe, for one thing, and that the units were properly controlled and were capable of firing in a limited zone, because they couldn't fire any direction. They had to keep a fairly limited area. And then the range for the farmers to be compensated for sheep that had been killed and any other problems that arose during the time. It didn't get too many, but it did get some problems.
And you enjoyed the work?
Oh, absolutely, yes. That was right up my street, yes.
How long were you detached to that?
It must have been some, I never forget the memorable occasion when the Home Guard asked if they could use the range, because they'd got, somebody had invented a sort of mortar, a super mortar thing, which they wanted to show off to the other Home Guard people, and hundreds of these people descended on the base, and I had the area cleared, and this thing was produced, and the shell was put in the gun, and we all listened and waited, and absolutely nothing happened. It never went off, and then so it was complete and utter flop as far as the demonstration went. And everybody went home. There's no harm had been done to anybody or anything. But it was not an unfunny one. We had trouble with fires, of course. We had endless trouble. We had a little anti-tank range which we rigged up, and they used to fire tracers of these tanks, these moving, this mobile tank thing. And it was all setting the heather on fire, and we had to be very careful to make sure they were out, because they were really visible targets for any aircraft at night. That was quite a problem.
Now, after this period at Hutton Hole, when you're on the range, where did you go next?
Well, I think we went to Glasgow, didn't we? What's it done? There's nothing between those.
Not in the book, no. That's 43, they went to Glasgow.
That's about it, yes. We were getting warm then, you see.
And what were you doing at Glasgow?
Well, Glasgow, we went up eventually to cross to, what's the name of that place? To go over to this place, from Weems Bay, there was some hards at Weems Bay, and we loaded our SPs onto some tank carrying craft, LCTs, to ferry them over to Rothsay, that's the place. And when we were halfway through the dispatch, a very strong wind got up, and it became impossible to load the rest of the regiment on these SPs. and we were stuck with a strip regiment for 2 days. And finally, we decided to try and load the remainder of the guns, which nearly ended in disaster because the wind was still fairly high, and we got an SP just ready to move onto the ship when the ship moved with the wind. And we tried to, the driver slewed the tank round, filled his tracks with shingle, and broke the track. Then we had the problem of the tank nearly onto the SP with a broken track and couldn't move. And on to add to our difficulties, the tide was coming in. So we decided to risk pulling it out with another tank. And that second tank did exactly the same thing as the first one. So we then had two tanks of the shingles, with the tide rising, and immobile, and they both been waterproof, ready for the invasion. And we couldn't, we hadn't anything else to move them, so we had to urgently get on to Glasgow, tell to send something out as quick as possible to pull these tanks out before the tide sank them. And the suitable equipment arrived just in time, as the tide was well up above the wheels by then. And we duly repaired the tracks, and eventually the wind dropped and the tide was all right, and so we got them on board. Then when we got to the other side, I was so relieved to get them there, but when we lowered the front end of the LCT for the first tank to go off, I thought, well, I'll go off first and just wade through these first few feet of water. Little knowing, when I jumped off, when I stepped off the end of the LCT, I stepped into 6 feet of water. And the distance, world record, speed record for the distance of 10 feet swimming was lowered because this wretched boat was chasing me on, you see. And I just got out in time before the thing went onto the beach and all was well. And then from there we assembled the whole regiment and we again mounted onto LCTs to practice the run and shoot on the Inchmarnock, which is a little island in the Scottish off Arran. And we practiced the run and shoot. We drove through the Cows of Bute, and a beautiful January morning, I saw it was January, and it was a big bull like this, and it was fantastic. And I said, here we be paid to do this, it's ridiculous. And then we turned left, as it were, fired off and came on and came back. There was an Austrian, and then we came. Then we went down to Bournemouth, I think, wasn't it?
Well, it seems that they went to various places, Brandon and then Bournemouth, but that's into 1944, yes.
Yes. Then we finished up in Bournemouth, where we were, where we did intensive waterproofing, ready for the invasion.
Now, what do you remember of the waterproofing?
The one?
What do you remember of the waterproofing? I mean, how did they go about it?
It was a very tedious business, and we used tins and tins of Bostik. It was quite a big operation to waterproof everything. Every vehicle was waterproof. And it did take a long time, it was very tedious.
Now, what was your position in the regiment at this time? What rank had you reached?
At that time, I was a troop commander, commanding A troop, a 413 battery.
And what did that entail, would you say? What were the duties of the of a troop commander?
A troop commander is a very good command indeed. in those days, because you had two troops of guns and a battery headquarters. You had, I think something like 10 officers altogether, and about 100 or so men. And it was a very good command, it really was. And it was in a regiment like ours, when we were all split up into troops and things, it was very, very good indeed. And we stayed at Bournemouth until we moved into Southampton to load on for LCCs for the invasion, natural invasion.
How did you feel about the invasion? I mean, had you been looking forward to getting into action? You'd been training for 4 years.
We were looking forward, and we were very, not unnatural, we were very, not anxious about it, but we were very concerned, very aware of the problems which we were likely to meet, or some of the problems which we were likely to meet.
Do you think you'd been properly trained and briefed for the operations?
We were fortunate. We had very, very few requests for reinforcements, and therefore our regiment was a highly trained state. We were very lucky because General Dempsey and General Nicholson, who was the CRA, kept a very watchful eye over the units which were earmarked for the invasion to make sure that they didn't get depleted by calls for reinforcements.